Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the podcast that is very, very sleepy.
I'm not. I'm fine.
I'm sleepy.
You would be.
I'm tired. I've had a long day. We both had a long week.
We did. Lots of stuff was happening.
We postponed a week, which I think it's only the second time we've done that. We're creeping up pretty close to our 20th episode, but I don't know. I'd say two delays in 20 episodes. Is that good or bad? I think that's pretty good.
For us, I think it's fine. We've had some pretty hectic things, happen, so...
You had a tree fall on your car?
Yeah, then I didn't even, miss an episode for that.
We got the inside scoop on the car tree conundrum.
The conundrum, I like that. That's a good, I'll refer to it as that from now on.
In fact, didn't you just have another vehicular, delay?
Oh, yes, I did. This other car we own was kind of a POS. And so we had to get rid of it. And so we did, and we bought another car. And that's kind of part of what happened last week. And then the holiday break, we had my brother and my mom in, and it was just, hectic. It was one thing after another. Mm-hmm. And so it came down to the line, and I was like, I didn't get this done, I didn't get this done, didn't get this done. What do you want to do? Well, why don't we just not do it? Oh, okay. That's a good idea, actually. So.
Well, yes. So... before I forget, you are Richard Wally.
And you're Cassidy Robinson still.
Yeah, I don't remember. My week was crazy too, but do you remember why? I already forgot.
I think you're just like, no, you did, you turned in your, you're getting your application and stuff ready.
I've already forgot that. In a week, I applied to grad school. Normally people spend a good 4 or 5 months gathering materials and, getting letters of recommendation, all of that stuff. I suggest anybody, if you're really serious about it, to delay it to the last week and get everything in the day before the deadline. It's a rush. I mean, some people are really into skydiving or base jumping or shark fighting, whatever it is. I say applying for grad school in a week, that is the ultimate thrill.
Wow, exhilarating, I suppose.
It is. When you're on the last day and you're emailing your professors, do you have your letters ready? I've known nothing like it.
Did they want to hurt you kind of because you gave them a week?
Not exactly. I emailed them all a while ago, 4 months ago, and then I had to email them again when it was crunch time because I wasn't sure. It was partly my fault, it was partly their fault. I wasn't exactly sure how the process worked because it's all electronic now because, the world hates paper. And so I thought that I had to have everything in all in one go. I had to gather up all the different documents and send it all in one press of a button. When in reality, the programs you use to do this nowadays, this is so boring for anyone who doesn't care. The programs you use to do this, you can go and update it and change things as much as you want up until the point you want to submit. And so, yeah, they could have had sent their letters 5 weeks ago, and I could have sent all my stuff in when I had to.
Oh. So. Well, there you go.
Uh-huh. Just in case anyone cares, just to wrap that story up, I'm applying at NYU and in Chapman University in Orange County to hopefully be able to do this with legitimacy.
I think you can do it legitimately anyways, but it does add a little bit more credit, sure.
Yeah. Apparently, Colin Hanks went to Chapman. I was looking at their alum list.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And that guy who directed Like Crazy.
Oh.
meet. Yeah. Anyway, so that's our lives. Who cares?
Yeah, no. Not really. Let's get on to the
Our really long excuse for why we didn't have an episode last week. What do you have for us today?
Well. Because when anything ever comes up about this, I have to read it, because, you know, I can't help myself. Mr. Guillermo del Toro.
Okay.
His next project has been announced.
No, it hasn't, but go ahead.
Yes, it has. Legendary. According to Mr. Del Toro, he states that this, making Pacific Rim, was his best experience ever making a film with a studio.
Oh, so, you mean a major, not outside of his, like,
Spanish film? Well, I'll take his exact words. He says, I went through the experience of Pacific Rim with Warner Brothers and Legendary, and it was the best experience I've ever had making a movie, period.
Wow. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing for the movie, but that's, interesting to hear him say.
I think it should be a good thing. It looks cool, so.
Yeah.
But basically, they asked him for more scripts, so that's been going really well. And, the three he turned in was At the Mountains of Madness, this okay. Count of Monte Cristo steampunk-esque thing he's been working on for a long time.
Sure.
And then he also turned in this littler project that he's been wanting to work on. And he didn't think it would actually go through, but Legendary says, yeah, we want to do this. It's called Crimson Peak, and this is what his description is of it. It says, Crimson Peak is a very self-oriented, classical, but at the same time modern take on the ghost story. It will allow me to play with conventions of the genre I know and love, at the same time subvert the old rules. So basically he's doing that. Between that, he's going to get his Pinocchio little mocap animated thing off the ground. He's going to do that, and then he's going to do the pilot episode for The Strain for FX, but then this is his next movie in the shoot, so... That's pretty exciting. He's found, you know, a little groove to work under. So after hiatus, maybe he'll pump out, you know, a bunch of projects real quick. So
yeah, that would be nice. I mean, you know, some people do that. I think, you know, Spielberg did that kind of recently, where he took a long break between Munich and Tintin and Warhorse, and then all of a sudden it's like bam, 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 bam. So hopefully that's what you know. It's just the he got a little backed up, and now everything's going to be coming out regularly. Yeah.
Well, I'm also excited, too, because an article I read a little bit ago, too, something else, he's been working on a video game for a while.
Okay.
And it's a sandbox game, and it's a Lovecraftian, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But the company he was making it with actually went under.
Yeah.
But he's been showing it to a bunch of different companies, and he thinks he's settled on one, so that's exciting as well. So I hope that gets off the ground, because I guess he's done with story and all that with it, and it's ready to just go into production. So
that's exciting for everyone else in the world but me. I'm not against him doing it. I don't think it's artistically a problem. I don't play video games, so whenever people I like are investing a lot of time doing a video game, it's like, just make a movie.
Well, you're wrong, and we all feel sorry for you.
All the gamers of the world. If you're a gamer and you listen to our show, email us and what you think about that. About me being lame, yes. Or movie makers doing video games. Maybe we'll save that for a pet topic. My news item just came out today. I think it's probably hit the wire, as they say. Dane DeHaan, the main actor from the movie Chronicle, he also had a small part in Lincoln and Lawless earlier this year. He's really kind of a fresh young face that just kind of exploded this year. He has been cast as Harry Osborn in Mark Webb's sequel to The Amazing Spider-Man, officially.
That's pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, I mean, though, there's one thing I'll say about this franchise. The casting has always been cool and exciting and fresh and interesting. Their casting director if there were such awards for them, should get one.
Agreed.
I don't necessarily think the movie does a lot with the really good cast they get. But,
I still think you're wrong, but go on.
Yeah, we disagree on that one. But I think it would be an interesting take on Harry Osborn, and I like him as an actor. I think he has a lot of interesting interiority and angst, and he has like this young DiCaprio kind of energy about him. So I'm into it.
Yeah, no, I've enjoyed him, and I keep seeing him pop up in random things. We've been doing True Blood lately, and he's in that. All of a sudden, I was like, what the heck? Oh, it's that guy.
But he has this really young face, so he can definitely still pull off high schooler and all of that stuff. So,
yeah. No, and he's got a small frame and stuff. Yeah, no, he's good.
Yeah.
I like him.
I dig.
So I think that's exciting. And honestly, I think that the potential for this next Spider-Man film is a lot bigger, too, because they don't have to deal with Origin, which I think is what dragged down the film, honestly. I don't think that... anything else really did, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. I definitely think just on principle, the sequel has to be better. And because they get all that origin backstory stuff out of the way, now they can just kind of really establish their universe. I'm excited to see what the cast does. I believe it's your turn for the pet topic?
Yeah. So, I'm going to go this one. You can veto me in the middle if you want and just cut this out. But, recently we kind of went on a little binge and bought a few movies. And for really cheap, I picked up a film called Ernest Scared Stupid from my childhood I loved a lot.
Ah, yes. It's my favorite Ernest movie.
It's mine as well.
With Ernest Goes to Jail at a close second.
That one's pretty fun. I also like the camp one, but that's me. I don't remember what other ones there are. I know that there was a couple afterwards I never really saw. Or whatever.
Yeah, his later stuff not as good.
Yeah, but, okay, the other thing I started thinking about when watching this movie.
Okay.
Was Pee Wee Herman was kind of around the same time. It's kind of a similar-esque character.
Yeah, these strange adult characters in children's programming.
These strange adult male figures.
Both, yeah, who both
address... That are hanging around with kids. My question is, does that creep you out a little?
I don't know. I mean... It's hard to say because, like, when I was a kid, I didn't think anything of it. I mean, you know the backstory of Ernest, right? Because it's kind of interesting. Actually,
I don't think I do, actually.
Both Ernest and the backstory of Pee-wee are pretty interesting. They both come from worlds that have nothing to do with children's programming, but their careers kind of led them to it for some reason or another. Ernest was created as a... TV commercial personality. He was this character he invented, what's the actor's name? Jim Varney.
Yeah, that sounds right.
He invented this character and he kind of basically sold it to commercials. He's like, I have this weird redneck character that I invented who talks to the camera, and then like all of these different stores and businesses in LA hired the Ernest character to sell the product. And then the character kind of took off as an entity outside of the advertising, and that's when the Ernest movies started being made. So that's sort of strange. And then with Paul Reubens doing Pee-wee, he originally created that character as a skit at Second City. Or was it The Groundlings? I think it was The Groundlings, which was a pretty adult kind of mini SNL sort of thing. It's like one of the main sketch comedy groups that SNL sort of mines actors from. And in fact, when he was in the Groundlings at the same time, Phil Hartman was one of his best friends, and he invented Pee-wee for that. And it was basically, you know, like kind of a raunchy adult, a lot of innuendo and all that stuff. And then somebody saw him and liked it and decided to greenlight a kids show with it. But if you go back and watch it, there's a lot of innuendos still in there.
Sure.
But yeah, so the question is it creepy to have adult characters hanging out with kids? You definitely don't see it like that anymore.
Adult male. I don't know why the male bothers me so much, but I don't know, maybe it's, yeah, kid, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
But
I mean, in lieu of the recent news to come out of the whole Kevin Clash Elmo scandal, which we kind of touched on a little while ago, back when he was cleared, and now there's more allegations that have been stacked upon him, and he's been fired officially.
Yeah, I even defended him, and he let me down.
And he let you down. I still have an opinion about the whole thing, but I'm not going to go into it for fear of losing every listener we have.
Please don't. I might ask you afterwards, because now you've piqued my curiosity, but...
We'll make it.
We'll have to have a talk about inappropriateness.
But no, in lieu of that, it's actually something of an interesting question, but because you don't see that anymore. I mean, you might in animation, like in something like Up, or something like that, you see an adult hanging out with a kid, and it's not really seen as weird or strange or anything like that. Or, I mean, even Wreck-It Ralph, which came out recently, even though that's kind of hard to say because they're not real people living in any kind of real world.
Yeah, it's a little different.
A little bit of a stretch. But, as a kid, obviously, I didn't think anything of it because that's just, you know, I... innocent enough not to go there in my mind, even though Stranger Danger was at an all-time peak. But when you grow up and you kind of look back at it, especially like after Pee-wee scandal and all that stuff, and Jim Varney, actually, he came off pretty unscathed. I don't think he ever had any crazy scandal. I mean, he died of cancer, which is sad, but that's not a scandal.
No, that is not.
I guess the short answer is no, it didn't creep me out.
Well, you does think it, about it.
Does it
doesn't creep me out necessarily. I just found it weird that I could just like, man, that's kind of weird, you know, these adult, you know, kind of weirdo characters hanging out with these kids. Like, I don't know, it's just something.
And there's never, in the, either show, or either presentation, whatever, there's never, like, any other adult, like, these parents of these children who, like, object to it or question it or anything. Like, usually they're not even characters, any other adult. It's, like, the kid.
Well,
and
I remember from the TV show, vaguely, I remember him having, like, the black mailman or so. I can't remember what he was.
Are we talking about
a really weird costume on.
Are we talking about Pee-wee or...
Pee-wee.
Yeah. No, there were other adult characters in that. There was the girl and stuff like that. But that one's kind of different because that wasn't supposed to take place in any kind of realistic world. Like there was talking chairs and like, you know, strange magic appliances and stuff like that. Whereas Ernest was more. I mean, it's obviously pretty arch and pretty. Jokey, but it was supposed to take place in the world that we live in.
Yeah, well, I mean, watching Ernest too, like, there was a weird part in the movie. What made me think of it is basically like the parents are like telling the kids you shouldn't be hanging out with this adult man. And I was just kind of watching that, being like,
Oh, do they address it in that one?
Yeah. Well, they don't necessarily. They don't like it's weird. It's just like they tell them not to like you shouldn't be hanging out with him. You know.
Yeah.
He's an adult man, and I was just like,
Yeah, I don't remember that. I always thought that the movies never really went there as far as that goes, but, interesting, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, no, I don't think it's that creepy. And I mean, honestly, setting up stars, you know, these people who live these in these horrible, horrible, not necessarily lives or whatever. Not all of them are like drug addicts or whatever, but you know, a lot of them come from, you know, not most the best backgrounds or
Well,
anything like
it's.
that. And to set them up as like a you know, a role model, that's very silly. Especially, yeah, like Pee-wee's case. Yeah, he was a stand-up comic beforehand. He was a an improv. You
Yeah.
know, you shouldn't maybe set him up as a kid, you know, role model. That doesn't make sense.
Well,
So.
I don't think there's any problem with taking Pee-wee and changing the format to make it a kid show. I mean, it was a very successful show that a lot of people really love, and a lot of people love the movies.
No, agreed. That's not. I'm just saying
I think.
to set him up, and then like when that happens, to like ridicule him so much, it's like kids aren't really, you know, look.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're talking about. They don't know he did naughty things in an adult theater. I didn't know until I was a little bit older. I didn't know that he disappeared all of a sudden.
No, well, I had a pretty good idea. I mean, but the thing that was sad about Pee-wee's departure was that the news was so kind of telephone, because it was before the days of the internet and all of that stuff. So by the time it had spread and everyone kind of knew what he did or whatever, it was never clear to me what he did.
Yeah.
Like I knew that he did something bad and that it was something perverted or whatever,
Yeah.
but in my head it was like child molestation or something, because that was all around the same time as Michael Jackson too.
Okay, sure.
So I think I'd always thought until I was quite a bit older that he'd like turns out he was a child molester, and then I heard like watched the E! True Hollywood Story or something like that and realized, oh, he was just jerking it at a theater.
An adult theater, yeah.
Yeah, which is I'm not saying that like if you're famous for being on TV as a children's personality, you probably should, you know, just do it at home like the rest of us. But you know,
Keep
just
going.
words of wisdom to those out there. But it's certainly not in the same realms as bad as I thought it
Yeah.
was.
Well, I remember, you know, kids telling dirty jokes about it, but yeah, I knew it was something perverted, but I had no idea what it was. And I secretly still was like, man, I wish I could watch Pee-wee Herman. Like, I remember that, but
You're
that's
like,
just my own sad little tale, I guess.
you were like embargoed from watching it after the.
My mom didn't say no, but it just seemed like the character and a lot of everything else besides, I mean, besides the movies and stuff, it just kind of disappeared. Like,
Well, I mean, the whole or not. Well, him too, kind of, but PBN and Ernest, they both kind of became their style of comedy. Their shtick kind of became passe by the mid-90s, because then it was all Ninja Turtles and all this, you know, less innocent, less whimsical kind of stuff for kids. It was more, you know, comedy. They weren't really selling comedy to kids anymore. It was more about Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers and, you know, beat 'em up action cartoons that became bigger in the 90s.
Sure.
So, we'll move on now to our review section, and we have 2 weeks worth of reviews, two movies that we both saw. And I'm interested to talk to you about both of them, because I think they both garner a decent amount of discussion. And we'll start with Life of Pi, directed by Ang Lee, his latest film. It's in 3D. I think the first time he's ever done a 3D movie. And basically, this is based on a really popular young adult novel that was kind of floating around a few years ago. The story is about a boy named Pi, PI, like the equation, who lives in India with his family, and at a young age, he decides he's going to convert from Hindu to Catholicism, Muslim, while still retaining his Hindu heritage as well. So simultaneously, he believes in three or four different pantheons, And his father owns a zoo, and he gets an offer for a job in Canada, so they pack up the zoo on a boat, you know, animals, maybe two by two, I don't know, on a boat, and they float out to sea on their way to Canada. The boat capsizes, and he loses his family. He's on a life raft with a tiger and a few other animals. So the trailer doesn't show a whole lot as far as you kind of get all the idea that it's sort of a survival movie, but you don't really get much else than that if you haven't read the book. So what did you think about Life of Pi?
I mean, it was a fun little journey. It was interesting. I didn't know that there was going to be bookends. But I mean, it was a fun little journey, and some of the scenes he set up were beautiful. Mm-hmm.
I guess.
And it was a feel good movie, which was interesting. I didn't really expect that for some reason, but I guess that's the one way it tricked me. But I mean, other than that, I didn't think it was too. I don't know. It didn't trick me too much, so.
You pretty much got what you thought you came for.
Well, yeah, I knew it was going to be something somewhat lighthearted, and anytime there's a survivor story, it usually doesn't. At least the ones I've seen, they usually don't like end up going like super cannibal or anything like that.
Yeah. Although I will say, I mean, given that this is a movie for all ages, basically. The movie does suggest or evoke some pretty dark stuff.
Some primal stuff, definitely. No, I mean, it's beautiful. And I thought the use of animals was really cool, and I thought, you know, how they told the story was very, very interesting and fun.
Yeah.
And it's not completely like, you know, kids fare or something like that, you know. It's got some pretty profound moments and stuff, profound ideas in it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, I guess on the whole, I liked it, but to me, it was like, oh, you know, I watched it, it made me feel good on the inside, the warms and fuzzies,
yeah.
And then I left the theater, and I was like, I probably won't ever watch it again.
Did you see it in 2D or 3D?
I did see it in 2D. I kind of was like, maybe I should have seen it in 3D, but...
Yeah, I saw it in 2D as well, you know, budget, blah, blah, blah. I'm hearing a lot of people say, though, that this is, like, you know, that he uses 3D in a really interesting way. And when I was writing my review for it, I kind of came to the realization that Ang Lee has always been a very... He's an interesting director because his visuals carry just as much weight as the thematic and narrative stuff. Even his version of the Hulk, which is, you know, basically hated by everybody, I think it's a really interesting movie. It's not a totally successful movie.
No, it's completely a hot mess, but I still kind of, yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. I mean, it's, I can't say it's a good movie, but I can say it's an interesting movie. So.
Yeah, and he tried a lot of different things there with visuals. I mean, besides the fact that he, you know, motion captured and he was doing things with CGI that had never been done before, and two kind of mixed results. But, I mean, like the paneling and the framing and the split screening and all that stuff to sort of evoke the comic book look.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen more of that since then, too, which yeah. I've been kind of surprised by because so many people like were like, this is crap, you know?
Yeah.
But I've seen it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Michelle Gondry tried to do that a little bit with Green Hornet, too. But yeah, so, and I mean, besides that, I mean, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is both very, very visual and very, very narrative and thematic, and even Brokeback Mountain, which is, and The Ice Storm, both two movies that are both kind of more somber and grounded, but he uses imagery in an interesting way to sort of, he does it the right way. He uses the imagery to sort of... pad the narrative more, or to inform the narrative, or the characters.
The one thing, too, you got me thinking of, and it's not really the same as what you're saying, but I think it is kind of part of, it's very sensory, like, it's not just, I mean, even though it's visuals, he gives you a little bit more in the frames, too, So yeah. I'm thinking, you know, you feel how big the well is when it jumps over, you know? You
yeah.
feel a lot of the things in place of just watching it. And so I kind of see that in some of the other movies I've seen of his, you know, when they're running across the roofs on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you feel the height. You feel, you know, or in Hulk, you see the little breeze go through his hair and stuff like that, and you feel kind of going with them. And
yeah.
so it's kind of interesting, the journeys that you feel in his movie.
He's very, very interested in the interior emotional story of his main characters, and he really wants to put you in their shoes as much as possible. And I think Life of Pi does that really well in some aspects and doesn't do that very well in others, where I think it succeeds, and what the reasons that I like the movie is basically this is a big visual 3D thing, you know, mainstream film dealing with pretty sophisticated subject matter. And I think he tackles religion and spirituality. I mean, that's basically, this whole thing is an allegory for spirituality in a multicultural world. And how do we, you know, how do we live amongst each other, and how do these cultures combine or mix, and how do these different ideologies find a common ground, or can they? And I think that's essentially what he's trying to tackle with this movie, and at the same time still, you know, making an entertaining movie that you can eat popcorn to. So that's what I like about the movie. My issues with the movie is that the best things about the movie are its ambiguities. You know, there's a lot of question as to whether or not we're seeing is real or not. Is this just a big fish story, or did this actually happen the way he's saying it, or it's all just symbolism anyway? So I think we're supposed to draw our own conclusions. But with this framing device that you mentioned, we have a future Pi who's like 40-something years old, and he's being interviewed by an American newspaper journalist or a novelist or something like that, to tell his story. And I feel like they keep cutting the flow of the story and all the interesting ambiguities so that they can kind of spell it out for the audience who might not have the patience to figure it out for themselves. And I was kind of, I feel like those moments kind of undercut what the movie's trying to do. And I almost doubt that Ang Lee wanted those moments, but And I have nothing against the actors that are in those scenes. They both do a really good job. I just think it's trying to spoon-feed you stuff that isn't going to fit on a spoon very well.
See, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that Ang Lee... I think Ang Lee did put them out in on purpose. I don't think he was forced. But I do feel that that they did... And I do agree with the interruption of flow. I wasn't very interested about the bookends, to be very, very honest.
Yeah.
I was a little more bored at those parts, and I was kind of like, okay. But to be honest, like, the whole, like, journey and trip thing, it was just so visual and so beautiful that I was just kind of like, oh. Yeah. It's kind of hypnotic in a lot of ways. But,
well, it's kind of like a dreamscape.
Yeah.
And I think it works like that. But when it breaks that to go into, oh, so, you know, I mean, there's literally scenes where the interviewer... character is asking the adult Pi, oh, so what you're saying is this means this?
Yeah.
And I just I just thought it was kind of sad, because I really would have liked to drawn those conclusions myself, or, you know, settle on my own interpretation rather than having it spelled out for me.
No, agreed. Agreed.
But I still think it's a really good movie, and it's definitely...
Oh, it's very solid.
Yeah.
No, I think
seeing.
It's solid, and I think it's worth seeing.
Especially in theater.
I guess my own, like, personal, and maybe it's just aesthetically, there could be a lot of things going on, but it's not something I'd probably revisit a lot. It's just, there's not a lot there for me to go back for. I don't know why, but I just feel that way. I feel that I won't in the future. I think I got everything from it. I picked up on all, you know, because they did explain it. I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's what it is.
Well, and I think that has something to do with the fact that it's trying to aim for a broader audience, specifically an American audience, because this is really loaded with Eastern philosophies. A lot, kind of similar to Cloud Atlas in that way.
Except Cloud Atlas did the opposite and was less clear.
Yeah, it was less clear, but I think it was better. And I think that this movie would actually garner more repeat viewings had it not, you know, wrapped it up so nicely.
So, yeah, it just kind of, it gave you all the beats.
Yeah.
It was a lovely pop song, but then you got over it.
Yeah.
Killing Them Softly is a film about some wise guys in New Orleans. It's about specifically a couple of amateur ones that rob some bigger fish, so to say, one of their gambling rings. And it goes poorly, and so some hitmen get called in to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Cassidy Robinson, what did you think?
What did I think about Killing Them Softly? I liked the movie a lot, and I think, interestingly enough, I'd say that even though there's not a lot of similarities between the two movies we're talking about today, they're similar in the fact that if you want to be annoyed with them, you could easily be annoyed with them. I think both movies definitely have a strong ideology about them, and they're trying to kind of present it in a genre friendly way.
Mm.
And in the case of this movie, this is very, very, like a lot of movies that have come out this year, really concerned with the economic state of America. Basically all gangster movies that have come out of the American studio system, and even to some extent other studios as well, have always been sort of a reflection or a mirror or a parody of the American dream, the capitalist ideal of going out and making something of yourself. And I think the interesting thing about this movie is it does that in the way that you expect a gangster movie to do that, but it kind of does something a little bit different with it. You know, like Scorsese and Coppola and all of the people working sort of in the mob genre, they always present the gangster lifestyle as something kind of romantic, as something kind of like larger than life. And here we're dealing with, Andrew Dominik, who directed this, who also did The Assassination of Jesse James a few years back, he kind of presents this as the American dream is broken, that the American dream is dead. that he presents the gangster lifestyle as basically being a shitty 9-to-5.
Sure.
And he shoots it very kind of gritty and dingy, and nobody's wearing like really nice clothes. They're never eating out of like really fancy restaurants. There's nothing like the Coca-Cabana scene in Goodfellas where they're getting the star treatment or anything like that. He basically shows it as like a large corporation that you're working for, and there's the people on top, and there's the lower ring people on the bottom. But essentially, this movie is like the water cooler gossip of this corporation.
Agreed.
It's a really, really simple plot, but he sort of explores it deeply, I would say. But did you think that because the allegory that I'm trying to explain and maybe not doing so well, did you think that he beats you over the head with it too much, or did you think that he earned it the way that he thought he did?
I honestly, the ending kind of wrapped it up nice, and I didn't disagree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I viewed it a little different because I didn't see it as the American dream is dead. I saw it more as this is what the actual American dream is. But sometimes it was a little, like their dialogue was a little, it was like covered up by what they were saying, or And it was less interesting. And so it was a little too blatant at times, but at the same time, I don't know. I think it's a solid film.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess where I went to with it was, it had a lot of style and it was doing, but it was like the opposite of Drive. All the characters spoke a lot.
Yeah, it's a very, very talky movie.
But didn't do a lot. Whereas Drive is the exact opposite. They do a lot of things, but don't speak that often.
Yeah.
And I honestly felt like it was a solid film. I thought that it was, you know, it played well in its genre, its crime genre. But I feel like it needed, there was something missing. There was an energy missing. There was a lot of things missing from it. Specifically an energy. And part of it may have been just this, you know, cramming this idea down our throat. But I don't know at the same time, like, cause I kind of enjoyed, I guess I kind of agreed with his, his standpoint. So I wasn't,
yeah.
I don't know if the delivery was as good as, cause it kind of seemed like he was almost wanted kind of a Tarantino thing. But he didn't deliver it like Tarantino delivers it. Tarantino definitely, he'll have these huge things of dialogue, but then he gives you something. Whereas in this film, I didn't feel like it really did that. I felt like they talked and 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 talked. And then the next scene, they just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. Which a lot of times talking head movies don't bother me, but this one specifically just kind of droned.
Yeah.
Oh, that's silly. Anyways, keep going.
No, I actually, to some extent, I agree. And while this is a very strange movie, because it was one of those movies where I did not know how I felt about it for almost the entire movie. I mean, I definitely was like, okay,
agreed.
this is really well made. The cinematography is really cool. The acting is really good. The writing suggests good. But I'm not sure if it is. And then, but I just didn't know, like, okay, so there was some stuff I felt that was kind of on the nose. Like, there was, throughout the movie, there's a lot of stuff where you hear these radio or TV broadcasts, so they'll be passing
yes.
a TV. The camera will actually, like, pan a TV and then sit and watch it for a little while after the characters are not even in frame anymore. And you'll be seeing the Obama election stuff when he was first elected. This kind of takes place during the time that we were transitioning from Bush to Obama, and he's saying something about that, about our economic state, you know, from one president to the other, and where that has led us to now. And to some extent, I felt that from time to time, I was like, okay, we get it. You've played this hand already. But then there's that last scene, because all throughout the movie, and maybe this is a spoiler, so turn down the podcast for a few minutes if you think you don't want to know what happens in the last scene. But I feel like as though I need to talk about it. Throughout the entire movie, you never see the characters address it. It's always on. It's, you know, definitely part of the milieu of the movie. And the radio is always on, the TV is always on, it's happening in the background all the time, and it's really, really obvious to the audience, but the characters never address it. Until the last scene, where Brad Pitt's character responds to Obama's acceptance speech after he's just been elected, and that's the last beat of the movie, that's the last line, and it seemed to, like, it almost was like an M. Night Shyamalan-esque twist, where I was like, oh, wow, I went from being annoyed by it to, like, oh, okay, you had a plan.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, just, it's a movie that if that last, I don't know, 3 minutes didn't exist, I'd probably feel kind of B-minus, C-plus about it. But with that last 3 minutes, it kind of bumps it up to like a B plus to me.
See, for me, it would have been like a, I did feel like it redeemed, I did like it, and I liked the ethos, and I do think it redeems it a little bit, but at the same time, I don't think it bumps it enough, because I don't think that the viewing experience is makes up for it. The actual viewing experience, I think, is very it drones too much, and it for some reason, to my mind, the first thing I can kind of conjure up is like a lecture in some school, and everything else is boring, but then the last thing the teacher says is good, and so you have a positive feeling about that, but does that make the rest of the lecture good? And I'm just kind of like, there was some good facts there, some good stuff going on. But like I said, it's a solid film. I just don't think that it's, I'm still at a B- with it, just because it, or maybe even a C+. I think a lot of times it gets in the way. I don't think it lets you interpret it enough. And it does hold way too long on those scenes of Obama or Mr. Bush speaking. And I think you only needed one or two of those. I don't think I don't think there needed to be as many as there were.
I agree. I mean, even if you just gather all those scenes and show them in a string, it doesn't add up to a lot of screen time. But there's nothing other than that last scene in the dialogue that even suggests, because up to that point, I thought, okay, this is a director's choice, not a writer's choice. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of changed all that. But I actually kind of, this is again, stuff I kind of figured out or decided on a while after watching it. I sort of like the fact that nothing really happens. I sort of like that people are talking a lot, but never really saying anything. I kind of like that it's not a showy movie, that it's not, it's kind of like I said, sort of presenting the gangster lifestyle as a boring 9-to-5 job. And I sort of like that he doesn't want to wow us with the movie. That's a pretty low-key experience. And I totally understand if somebody was like, I thought it was boring, I thought it was too politically messaging. I totally understand.
Those aren't my complaints. I think it's a solid film in general. I think it's solid. I don't think it's, but at the same time, I think it's a very flawed movie still. I don't think that you can, take all this, just because of one line at the end, which I do, like I've said before, I agreed with what he said. I don't believe that America was ever this, this huge land of equality. I think that that was a cute little thing that Mr. Jefferson added on there. I think that by far, America's always been about making money.
True. And a lot of I don't want to say that, it's because of the ideology of the movie that swayed me. I'm talking about this outside of whatever the movie's trying to say, whether I agree with it or not.
I just don't think still that one pivotal, which I do think does give it a little more clout, but I don't think it makes up for it. I think that there needed to be, there were parts where it was a droll. And where, I think some of the choices were purposeful. I still think that you can do that. I think that you can be bleak and still, but not have to be droll. I think that that is very possible. He could have done that easily just with set deck. Didn't need to do that with other things. And I don't disagree with anything you've said so far. I do agree, they made it shitty 9-to-5s. I just think that there's too many scenes that are too similar, and you're just watching the same thing over and over again. I think it reiterates itself too much.
And it's actually not that long of a movie. It's only like an hour and 30. But you do definitely, it's definitely deliberately paced, and I understand your criticisms, and I both Life of Pi and this movie, if someone were to come to me and be like, no, I thought it sucked, I don't necessarily feel the same way about it, but I can't say that I disagree with their point of view, because they are kind of divisive movies. We're going to talk now about our last film,
you're going to move on right now.
Which is Submarine, which I assigned you last week. Why don't you go ahead and describe the plot of Submarine?
Oh, can I?
Yes.
Basically, a young boy who is kind of a voyeur is in love with a girl, but meanwhile, he's also kind of trying to save his parents' marriage. He feels very responsible for it all. And basically it's his journey into trying to be this perfect person and save his parents' marriage and so on and so forth.
And kind of doing so haphazardly because he's still an awkward teenager himself.
Yeah, he totally wants to be an adult, but he's not at all. The film itself, I think, it's a solid, good film. Pretty dang funny. It's very The Graduate-esque, I must say.
Yes, yes.
Some of the things I did really dig about it, though, I really liked how he used color, and specifically with the reds and the blues. Then I really dug how he used fire and water as in the he juxtapositioned both of these, which are which they kind of, they're colors that kind of fight each other, and they're kind of elements that fight each other, but at the same time they're kind of complementary of each other in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so I dug those parts of it. It was a heartfelt, fun little film. It was very solid. All three of these films, it's very strange because I've been using that word so much this podcast, but for all three films, I felt that way. I thought they were very solid.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, this movie, I didn't really feel anything super lacking. And maybe it's just not my cup of tea is kind of how I feel about it. I actually thought it was very good, but I don't know. Visually is what I guess I came out of it being most like, oh, that's cool.
We should mention this is directed by Richard Iotti, who was the actor. He's the actor that most people know from the British sitcom The IT Crowd, and he also had a small part in The Watch earlier this year, which we also reviewed. The British actor. What the hell was that?
That was my response to The Watch.
Anyways, yeah, we didn't care for that movie a lot. But he wrote and directed this movie, and I think, you know, considering this is his debut film, it definitely owes a lot to a certain kind of specific cinema.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the British New Wave films that came out in the 50s and 60s, like movies like If and Billy Liar and The Knack and How to Get It, and you know the Angry Young Men period film in the 60s, but also like The Graduate, like we mentioned, and just sort of that era specifically, and even something maybe a little bit like A Band Apart.
Sure. I'm not super familiar with those with the British New Wave, as you said, so I can't comment on that.
Yeah.
And so it didn't come to mind, of course.
But I mean, there's a lot of other filmmakers who are sort of fans of that era, too, that I think people will maybe find comparisons in something like Wes Anderson. It would kind of be an easy go-to. But I really liked this movie a lot, and not just for the fact that it's, you know, I mean, it's basically a story we've seen 100 times, which is a coming-of-age story about a kid who, an awkward teenager, who's finding love for the first time, and it defines, you know, the way it juxtaposes, young, innocent love with adult, troubled love. We saw that even this year from Wes Anderson in Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah. True.
And I think both movies actually kind of play that pretty well, and I think could, you know, be a pretty good little double feature to kind of analyze how they're both using pretty similar influences in different ways. But I really love this movie a lot, and I think a lot of it is the style, and I think he's a really gifted writer, especially in dialogue.
Well, no, I mean, for how much voiceover was it, that was very impressive, because usually it can get kind of tedious.
Yeah.
But you kind of, I don't know, you enjoy the voice of him.
I think
it's backed up by the visuals enough, so.
Yeah. It felt very novelistic to me. In the voiceover and the way, I mean, it is kind of broken up into chapters too, and I think it might have been intentional. But it felt very much kind of like you're sort of following this journey of this young person. And I mean, he uses a lot of visual trickery, and it kind of breaks the fourth wall in a lot of ways, and you're always reminded throughout watching it that you're watching a movie. But I was surprised at how engaged I was in all the little different stories that were going on, and the way that he could kind of balance, you know, true heartfelt emotion, like, you know, really kind of plays that young, hopeful sort of naivety with, at the same time, you have this character that plays a neighbor that he thinks his mom may or may not be sleeping with. It's this totally arch representation of, like, you know, the worst kind of pseudo-science guru, hippie kind of character that we've seen in, like, a million other movies. I mean, you know, very similar to something you would see out of, like, a Napoleon Dynamite type kind of thing. But he, sure. The way that he's able to balance both of those things so carefully, I thought was really impressive as well.
Well, no, he had there was a lot of juxtaposition, but he juxtapositioned the things very well. I mean, like I said, it's a very well done movie. I don't have a lot of criticisms of it. When I said my cup of tea, it is the coming of age thing. I don't know what it is about that, but I'm just like, I'm over it. Like I said, it's very much me, I guess, my aesthetic when I watch a film. So I wouldn't never turn anyone away from the movie. I'd be like, no, I think this is a deserving and good film, especially if you're into this kind of a movie. But something like The Graduate or something, you know. Something very coming to agey. Talking about Moonrise Kingdom, the difference I saw in Moonrise Kingdom specifically is there was a lot more going on. There was a lot more characters bouncing around, and you could do a whole analysis of that. And so I don't even want to try to get into that because it'd be ridiculous. Specifically, I still enjoyed even because the balance between the adult and the kid stuff was very different, which is what is strange about, I guess, Moonrise Kingdom was specifically that the adult stuff, the kids, there's not really, there's more of a naivety to the adults than there are the kids in that film.
Sure.
Which maybe that kind of played with that idea, so it wasn't as much of a coming of age as a, you know, love is a silly thing kind of movie. This is very much more a coming of age kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of them are in their own way, but I think this movie, Submarine, more specifically follows that arch that you normally feel in a coming of age movie. It kind of hits all the same beats. It's something very similar to like An Education or The Graduate or, you know, Almost Famous or plenty of other movies that are like that. A genre that I actually really like, but. Or even Rushmore, if you want to go to another.
Rushmore's good, yeah. Another. I would say that's a very apt
comparison.
Yeah. Well, it's strange if you took Rushmore and Moonrise Kingdom and you kind of mixed them together, you'd kind of get this film.
Yeah,
but now that I think about it, which is interesting, but.
I specifically like sort of the throwbacky feel of it. I really liked. That he's drawing from these influences and he's kind of throwing his hat in to a genre that's kind of not really around anymore outside of Wes Anderson, but he does it in a way that doesn't feel like a Wes Anderson ripoff. It feels, it's almost like Britain taking it back. I was more impressed with the writing than probably anything else, but I think it was pretty well made as well. So I'll look forward to Iotti's next film if he decides to make one.
As long as he does it.
Yeah.
He's not just in somebody's film.
Well, you know, I like him as an actor, too. I think, you know, so like so many funny, interesting comedians, American films just do not know what to do with them. So they just fill them in ridiculous parts of these sort of underwritten non-characters like Russell Brand and him and a lot of other people. And so they just kind of get thrown in as the weird guy. But I think Iotti's a good actor, and he obviously has good instincts, or he wouldn't have been able to make as good of a movie as Submarine. So I think, you know, given a good screenplay, I he's a fine enough actor to watch as well. But
sure. No, okay. Agreed. sorry, I don't got much more.
No, agreed. Fair enough. That pretty much wraps our show. Before I list a bunch of stuff, we did get an email. Yeah, and it's not from somebody we know personally.
Ooh.
Yeah, I have no idea what this person looks like. So this
are are they going to tell us bad things about us?
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited.
Get ready. It's pretty scathing, I have to say. No, this is actually pretty complimentary. Apparently this person found us through Video Clerks, so that's still doing something for me. All right, this letter is from Byron, and he tells us, "Hey guys, I started listening a few weeks back after I found out that the Video Clerks has been discontinued. Sorry about that. You've got a nice show. I enjoy listening to the intelligent thoughts on film, and this week was no different. I guess that was probably our Skyfall episode. You guys know what you're talking about, and I appreciate the good discussion." Oh, no, this was on a Lincoln episode because he mentioned Spielberg. On Spielberg, I'd say that I like him most when he is doing genre stuff as opposed to trying to get a big message across in a dramatic film. For instance, I think his best films are Jaws, Raiders, and E.T. He tends to be really heavy-handed in his dramatic works, overemphasizing points and laying on the sentiment very thick. Anyways, just my two cents. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Byron. And if you like us, share us. Spread us like a BD.
Yeah, we're sailors.
Yeah, we want to go viral, so go
port
ahead.
Port to port.
yeah, just go ahead and like our Facebook page if you haven't done so yet. We're still, you know, waiting to get to that magic 30 mark. And
yeah, they're going to give us something, apparently, a present. We're not really sure what. We're just really curious to see what the hell it is.
We're going to be the kings of Facebook, officially.
Yeah. Well, and then if we could get 20 more, this is all pressure on you guys, because 30 is just one. If we get to 50, they give us something else.
Yeah.
Like a puppy or...
Maybe it's like Amway. I don't know. It's like some weird pyramid scheme that we're
trying to... Yeah, they take our souls at 50.
but anyway, we appreciate the letter, and if anybody else wants to weigh in on anything we've talked about or send us a letter, you can do so through jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. Like I said, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes at the iTunes store. Just type in Jabber and the Drone. You'll find us, subscribe, write a review. It helps us get noticed, apparently. You could sub or stream us on Podbean, which is basically our main website, and that is jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can find everything there, including our RSS feed. You can read my movie column on the MacGuffin podcast. I think actually in lieu of all of these economy movies that have come out this year, I might do an article about that. I feel inspired. And Richard is available through our Facebook page if you have any questions for him or me. So do that. And talk amongst yourselves. I want to know what our listeners have to say about things, you know, without our opinions as a basis.
Yeah, we've maybe already said this, and I'm being killing them softly right now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, what I think anyways, and I think you agree with me, is the important thing about criticism and review and stuff isn't necessarily to critique or say, you know, films are so easy to make and we should make them.
Yeah.
The point is really to start discussion because we love film and we think people should talk about it and it should, you know, be an amazing experience for everyone. So we're kind of little missionaries for this for film, and we wish people would talk about it more. So
agreed. So that's basically our show today, and next week we will do some more something or other. It's going to be the deadest week in movie history, so we might come up with a gimmick episode. I don't know. But until then, we will talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.